With COVID-19 cases on the rise, the state of emergency extended in Oregon, and some backtracking on shutdowns in California, we're looking at a longer haul staying around the house. The stay-home orders may have played a part in the increased numbers of people tending gardens this year. We've taken note by bringing in weekly advice on tending a garden from someone who has lots of experience. Lynn Kunstman is one of the Jackson County Master Gardeners. She's been joining us once a week to share her experience with us. If you've got a question, plop it on the table at 800-838-3760 by phone. Again, the email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Lynn, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So now that summer is here, are the people who thought they were geniuses at tending the garden through spring going to get some rude surprises?
Well, we're getting a rude surprise now with kind of the overcast weather, you know, in the beginning of July. Normally we have very hot temperatures, but I think surprising for a lot of people was the weed growth that has occurred because of the cooler weather and the extra rain that we got. And so weeds are a massive problem at this point. So people need to be weeding and then putting down some mulch to keep those weeds at bay.
Now, I noticed the burrs seem to be particularly bad this year. Is that just my imagination? Or
the cockle burrs? The burrs?
Yeah, the little guys.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't noticed them in my garden. I guess if you're out in the country, it's more of a problem. Or if you have pets bringing them home, excuse me. There's a seed bank of weedy plants out there in the soil, and certain conditions are favorable for different ones to emerge. And those seeds can stay in the soil seed bank for years and years. And so cockleburrs are probably out there waiting for conditions to be just right, and then they pop up, and then your socks and your pets are covered with them.
They are indeed. Yeah, the dog came out of one patch last week, and I was like, oh no, what are? He looked like a Dalmatian.
Yeah. Get the shaver out. Yeah, just take it all off.
Yeah, that was pretty much the thinking there. Yeah, there was patience and a comb in this case. But
right.
So some tips to weeding. So you can't defeat the seeds because they're going to lie dormant in the soil. But with individual plants, I mean, you really want to go at those things and get as much of the root as you can, or all of it if possible.
Yeah, you want to go after them as they're emerging, certainly before they start to flower, and pull the entire root. If you're in a confined space, like in a neighborhood, with surrounding streets and stuff, you can, after years of removing weeds, you can pretty well get a lot of them out of your garden because they sprout, you pull them, and then they're not there to reproduce any longer. And finally, you exhaust that seed bank of weed seeds. But, you know, if you're out in the country or in any kind of area where wind can blow in from a wild area, some of the stuff you don't want, it's an ongoing thing.
All right. So you never feel like you're done, like, hey, you know, I got weeds conquered
this year. You're never done with weeding. Yeah, yeah, you never. And the birds are always flying over, you know, and doing their thing, depositing more seeds for you. So
I should tell them they're not supposed to do that in the car. Nothing will grow there.
It's how nature works. That's right.
Right. So you were mentioning that that you want to make sure you get mulch in there, too, when you get the weeding done?
Yeah. For a couple of reasons, mulching in the summer is a great idea because you don't want water evaporating from your soil when the temperatures start getting up into the 90s and the 100s. You want to keep that soil moisture in place, and mulch does double duty for you. It keeps the soil evenly moist and so retains the water that you've put on the garden, and it blocks the weeds from germinating. Or they germinate and they die underneath it because they can't get to the light. It's a really good practice, especially in a food garden or a vegetable garden, but also around your garden beds, your flower beds, and your shrubs, that you want to have 2 to 4 inches of a nice bark mulch. Or you can use leaves, you can use grass clippings. Don't put the grass clippings on any deeper than an inch thick because they tend to get slimy.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You know, you want them to dry out. Straw, alfalfa, dry leaves, bark, you know, any kind of shredded bark. Mm-hmm. When you're growing vegetables at this time of year, because the vegetables are high enough in the garden, they're up and growing really vigorously, you can pull that mulch right up to the base of those, you know, your tomatoes, your peppers, all those things. So you suppress the weeds, you know, and the vines, the squash can grow over it. And so it's fine to pull the mulch all the way up in your vegetable garden. If you're putting it around trees and shrubs, you need to keep it 3 to 4 inches off the base of those woody plants, because if you leave it up to the trunk of the tree or the base of the shrub, it's an avenue for rodents to go in under there and then eat the cambium layer of your tree.
Oh, and kill it.
And gnaw away and kill it. Yeah, basically they'll girdle your bush or your tree and cause problems that way. So keep the mulch back a few inches from the base of any woody plants. But in your perennial garden, in your annual beds, annual flower beds, and your vegetable garden, you can pull that mulch right up. Cover everything, and then you'll have a lot less weeding, and you'll have more time to enjoy watching your plants grow and flower.
That would be a nice thing. So, does the kind of bark make much of a difference? Have you noticed that different performances with different bark from different trees?
Well, not that I know of. I you know, bark is just a highly carbon rich source of mulch, so it doesn't break down rapidly. Shredded bark, I like the appearance of shredded bark rather than like the round bark that a lot of people have under their kinnick out in their front yards.
The decorative bark, in other words.
The decorative bark, right? The decorative kind of red rolled bark, you know, it's processed and rolled and made to look that way. That actually lasts longer than shredded bark. I tend to like shredded bark because it actually will break down a little faster and enrich the soil. And I also think it's more natural looking. But, you know, it has to do with people's preference. And I don't think there's a big difference in the bark. The rolled bark, of course, doesn't have any green material in it. If you're buying shredded bark, oftentimes it has the leaves of trees that were, you know, people cut down some trees, they shredded all the woody material, but the leaves are in there too, and so there's more kind of green material mixed in there oftentimes. It's just a judgment call, yeah.
Lynn Kunstman here on the Jefferson Exchange once again with Weekly Gardening Tips. She's with the Master Gardeners Association in Jackson County, and you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Nancy in Lorraine. In Lorraine, Oregon, wants to talk about weeds again. She says, bindweed or morning glory? Suggestions to get rid of it in a perennial bed. Thank you. I know bindweed made you almost suicidal last time we talked.
Yes, right. Yes, I made a very inappropriate comment. Yeah. Bindweed is the only way to get rid of bindweed completely and permanently is to either dig down and get all the root out, which is very difficult because their roots are very, very deep, and to keep pulling it the minute, know what the little sprouts look like and pull them off immediately. Otherwise, you know, I hesitate to say this at all. Use a weed killer. And I would say not something like glyphosate, the Roundup that's out there everywhere that people use. I think that's a very dangerous chemical for people to be using. But it will kill the plant completely. Mm-hmm. There are other products out there like a vinegar or the horticultural vinegar, which is a 20% solution of vinegar. You can spray it with that. You have to keep repeatedly going back as the thing sends up new shoots and keep hitting it with that. There's also a product called Burnout, which is like clove and garlic oil, and it coats the leaves and they can't photosynthesize properly. But once again, you have to be on it, you know, as it reemerges. It's going to keep trying to, plants want to live. And Morning Glory especially wants to live. It wants to choke the world. And so you have to keep after it. The other thing that I tell people is boiling water, steam or boiling water, you can pour that on a plant.
Oh,
and
okay.
then that kicks it back. You know, I've taken my canning kettles full of water out where I have pavement that has weeds coming up through it, and I just pour boiling water on it, and it, those things, it smells like cooked spinach in your yard for a while. And then it all dries out, and then you rake it up and put it in the compost pile.
Okay. You
know? So that's kind of a cool deal. There are some cities now that are using steam to do, you know, roadway weed abatement rather than using things that are going to get into the stream.
Oh, that's very cool. So they're taking up the advice of the local master gardeners.
Well, or some age, you know, some organizations that are begging them to stop spraying the poisons that are killing the streams. Yeah.
All right, let's take a couple of questions and hear from listeners. Mark in Mount Shasta on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Lynn Kunstman.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Canadian thistle, but first I'd like to make a comment about the morning glory.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
A long time ago when I was farming, I was renting a field from a neighbor, and it was just full of morning glory. And what I did was planted a really tall variety of corn and spaced it really close, and that pretty much did it. It took care of it, you know, and in the second year there was no morning glory at all, so it just shaded it out.
Okay, and you got a question about thistle?
Yeah, Canadian thistle. We're in a farm in Mount Shasta now, and we're developing a garden in a meadow area, and it's got some Canadian thistle, and you know, we're organic, so we're not going to use any chemicals, but it is just really tough to get rid of. Do you have any tips or advice on that?
Boy, I am not familiar with that plant. I mean, I see it's probably like bull thistle or teasel or one of those that has gotten loose and, you know, it's invasive and is a problem. I do not know a trick for that, but I would recommend that you go to the Extension Service website, and I'm guessing that they have a PDF you could download that talks about getting rid of those kinds of thistle problems. So I can't help you directly, but I can certainly point you in the direction of getting that information online from the OSU Extension Service.
Mm-hmm. And they might have also more information if it's more of a California thing. There's a weed control handbook that comes out of UC Davis as well. And
UC Davis is your Extension Service down in California. That's right.
Yeah, so I'll put up links to that as well once we're done with the show today.
And so, they'd also have information about dealing with bindweed. I mean, any of those kind of invasive weeds, they have lots of publications about weed control. All the Extension Services do, because that's one of the big problems that, you know, gardeners and farmers have.
Absolutely.
So definitely use your Extension Service because you can download all that stuff for free.
Okay, another call here from Robert at Fort Bragg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Mm-hmm. Hi, thanks for the show. I have heirloom tomatoes in a small greenhouse. The greenhouse is about 25 feet by 8 feet wide, all glass. And then it's up against the house, so one wall is white. Heirloom tomatoes in pots, large, 15-gallon pot.
Yeah.
And I'm getting some mildew, and also some of the leaves die at the end. They start dying at the ends, and then some of the leaves are yellow with little spots on them. And what I do is I go out, there's lots of airway at the bottom of the plants. I planted them late. They were in little pots, so the base of the trunks are really skinny. And then when the tomato got in the pot and grew up to over 6 feet high, they're thick and healthy at the top and spindly at the bottom, some of them. So I did use neem oil, a tablespoon and a half of neem oil with 2 drops of biodegradable dish soap and just warm water, not real hot, but not real cold. and sprayed the plants, and that seemed to help, but do you have any suggestions?
So the little, it sounds like you've got a couple different problems there. You've got a little bit of a mildew issue going, is that right? And then the yellow spot.
Yeah, we keep the windows open so that the air blows through the greenhouse, and we open one of the doors. Mm-hmm. So we have a nice little breeze going through there during the day. The temperature is under 80 degrees.
So you might put a small fan in there to also move air through, because especially you're on the coast in Fort Bragg, the moisture.
3 miles inland.
Yeah, right.
So it gets warm.
Okay, so it's warm. But you've got a lot of moisture still in the air. And so the big deal in greenhouses is circulation of the air and really getting the air moving through there and exchanged on a regular basis. So a small fan might be helpful.
Don't have those little white butterflies fly in there sometimes.
Oh, those caterpillar looper butterflies. Yeah.
The white ones.
You're right. They're white. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are they doing?
They're cabbage looper butterflies. And they are looking for things like cabbage and other brassicas to lay their eggs on. But they are not going to harm the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going in there looking for stuff, and then they get trapped. If you've got tomato hornworms, that's a different deal.
Okay, so a bunch of things to think about there.
That's a moth.
That's
one of our bigger moths.
Yeah, thanks
for that.
Yeah, Robert, thanks for that. I got time enough for one more email from the return address uses amateur and talent. It says, I planted seeds from an acorn squash and it's thriving. Will it produce squash?
Maybe. Squash are tricky. If you saved seed from a squash, chances are you're not going to get the same thing that you started with. It's not the squash. Curcubits are very promiscuous, so you could get a squumpkin, you could get a squawkini. They do weird things. They cross promiscuously, and you cannot save seed from squashes.
Wow.
Unless you have them dozens of yards apart in a plantation.
All right, so mystery gourds.
Yeah, it won't work.
Mystery,
yeah, mystery
gourd of the fall.
Yes. Mystery. It might be good. It might be awful.
All right. We have links to the Extension Service and to the Master Gardener Plant Clinic, which is still operational through the pandemic. Lynn Kunstman is one of the Jackson County Master Gardeners and our weekly guest to talk about gardening stuff. And Lynn, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Talk to you in a week. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. More coming up. Stay tuned.